name is Kalina Bowler. I've worked for years in location management as part of Georgia's film and television industry. I help filmmakers find the perfect spots to shoot. On this podcast, we meet the people whose names you see when the credits roll. Sit back and relax for The Credits, a podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting. I have more than 40 credits to my name, and in all of my time working in Yollywood, I've seen it change a ton. There are more people of color, like me, working on sets. One of my mentors was the late Carl Johnson. He was one of the first Black electricians and grips working in Georgia's entertainment industry. A grip is someone who builds and maintains equipment for the cameras. There are different types of grips. Key grips are the supervisors. A dolly grip is responsible for the tracks and platforms that make moving camera shots possible. Those distinctions are important to define. You're about to hear about a lot of grips in this episode. Now, I've talked on this show with admiration for Carl Johnson. He played a major role in diversifying Georgia's entertainment industry. And so have my next two guests. Balaji Bailey began working on sets in the 1980s in the camera and electric departments. His son, Irie, followed in his dad's footsteps. But Balaji admits he wanted his son to follow a different path.
I tell you what, I didn't want him to be in the game.
Really?
I wanted him to be a lawyer.
So, Irie, you mean to tell me that you would have been a litigator somewhere? Like, how in the world did you get interested? Was it just because what your dad was doing?
He liked it. It's fun. Bunches of good-looking women and excitement.
Well, I grew up in the business, you know, going and helping my dad. I believe the first commercial I worked on, I was 13 years old. It was a Hardee's commercial or Arby's commercial. My father used to always work on all the music videos, Outkast, the first Goody Mob videos. I remember he used to bring the posters home and the T-shirts. Kilo Ali, his first video, all the big down south artists, my father worked on their videos.
So exactly.
I thought it was so cool, and I just wanted to be a part of the business because, you know, my dad worked in it, and it actually, I actually was raised on hip-hop, rap music, you know what I mean? It actually paid our bills in our home by them shooting the music videos and stuff, so I had a very unique outlook on the whole business, and my father, he just wanted me to go to school and get a good education, and he felt like I wouldn't do that if I started making all the money in the film business.
I mean, look, there's money to be had. I mean, I'm telling you, that was his selling point to me. I was in that class. I said, you worked on Kilo Ali's video? You kidding me? You know? And I'm telling you. So, I mean, let me ask you, how in the world, Balaji, did you get your start?
That's kind of a humbug. I had I used to work for the Bureau of Cultural Affairs doing programming over there. I was a cultural events programmer.
Okay.
And then I became a grantsman later on. And part of the cultural events thing, that's how I started doing sound, because I had to do the sound for the little concerts and stuff we were doing. And so part of the deal, the guy that I was working for, Tom Cullen, was creating the contract that Cable Atlanta had to use to get public access going. And then he made me go and take the public access class so we could start, had me, because I'd been doing all the little sound and stuff, to make me start videotaping things. Went down there kicking and screaming, didn't want to be bothered. And so I wound up taking the class, and I kind of got the bug. And so I got his mom. We did a show with her, a vegetarian cooking show. It was actually pretty successful. We won an award, and went on and did another regular show on the equivalent of CW, and that ran for a couple 3 years. And then they got another show that was like a civil rights show called Black Side Storybook, and that ran. So we did the cooking with ABBA, and what you call it, and that was kind of where I got the bug. Then the city job. I was working with the Bureau of Cultural Affairs. That got all south. You know, got crazy.
And the Bureau of Cultural Affairs?
Yeah.
The city of Atlanta?
Yeah, that's what I worked for, like 7 years. And so when that all went south, I left and took my pension and went up to NYU Film School and did their summer intensive. And then when I came back, couldn't find a job nowhere for like 3 years. Mm. White folk wouldn't even let me clean up. And so I wound up joining a reggae band. I played in a reggae band for a couple, 3 years until Spike Lee showed up. He saw me working, and Al helped.
Spike Lee said he wanted brothers on the job.
Oh,
right?
He was trying to get brothers on the job, yeah. But there wasn't. And so what happened, he had a lot of white cats who was like the leader, bosses, you know, and they were like mostly working. And he had a ton of black PAs. And he made sure that we had a bunch of us there.
Mm-hmm. You know, when speaking with people for this show, everybody I've spoken to, they're extremely passionate about it. Like, did you learn everything that you know from your dad, from, you know, workshops at the union? Like, how did you become so knowledgeable?
Well, I just got trial by fire. I started off working. I started off as a PA mm-hmm. back in 2000, and then I became an electrician. I worked with Carl Johnson for about 5 years as an electrician. And later on, I got with Ray Brown, the president of our union, and he hired me on as grip. And I worked on his show, Drop Dead Divas. It was on Lifetime Channel. And the show actually gave me a chance to, you know, be kind of stable in my career, because up until that point, I had only been working, you know, a month or 2 months. It was a 5-month show. I worked on it for about 3 or 4 years straight. So it gave me a chance to kind of build a foundation in the business. And those stage days, they just moved me up because I was the best third. You know, I was always paying attention on set. So then they moved me to the dolly grip. And I didn't know anything, and I just had to learn on the job. Mm-hmm. What really made me a great dolly grip, I was pushing dolly for about 2 or 3 years, and I was upset because I didn't understand what the director wanted, like when he wanted that push in, when he wanted that stop. And so I did like my father. I went to film school up in Maine. I did a 6-week work study in Maine, Maine Media College, and I learned about film from the ground up like I didn't know anything.
Okay.
And that experience allowed me to really move forward as a dolly grip and also as a cinematographer myself. I learned about the equipment and got a chance to learn about shooting, you know, screenplays, writing, editing. I learned all those things in that 6-week work study. And my work when I came back was way more better than when I went. Mm-hmm. And I just took the time to do that because I was frustrated with not being good at my job. I like to do my job and do my moves. I like to get my moves in one take, two takes, and move on. I don't like somebody to come and tell me, oh, well, can you do it a little faster, a little slower? But as a dolly grip, you have to be open to criticism because you're criticized all day about your work, and it has to be a certain way. The director has a way he wants it. The DP has a way he wants it. And as a dolly grip, you have to give them what they want. And if you don't do that, you're going to be fired. You got 50 people behind all these monitors looking at your movements. And if you miss something or do anything, they can see it. If it's a bump in the lens, if the boom down wasn't correct, you know, all that shows up. So what I pride myself on being able to do is to get those takes very fast, and we can do one or two because the actor's giving a performance, and you don't want to mess up the move and then that you messing up the actor's great performance.
Well, let me ask you this, Balaji. I'm listening to Irie, and I'm hearing how he's had so many opportunities. Do you feel that these opportunities were afforded to young men back in your time? Because I mean, you've been doing this for quite some time now. I want to say, what, early 80s maybe? Like late 70s,
yeah,
early 80s?
Yeah.
How has the industry changed here in Georgia for you?
Got a bunch more Negroes out here.
Talk about it, right?
None
before. It's a beautiful thing to see, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Because I think proportionally we got more than they got in LA or New York. Mm-hmm. LA, but when I came in, there was none. And there's like a few, three, with nobody in front of me. You know, when I was working, just having a job was a big deal. Just to be able to say that you work was a big deal. Because much less looking at somebody trying to be a dolly grip or a key or something like that. It just wasn't happening. And Atlanta was so small, the little work that was around here, most of the white folk had all that covered. They wasn't nobody else coming in. And so that's just how it was. So, you know, had to take a lot of cheese, eat a lot of cheese, keep a job, you know, and I had 2 kids and an old lady I had to support. So you have to sort of just do what you got to do. But I work hard and I was consistent, and I was about to call it a wrap in 93 when all the work stopped. And like I said, the videos came and it was all black. And I was all for it. I loved it. It was cool. And it was stayed like that for that whole 10 years. That it was just all right. I liked it. Negroes would give you be a pain in the butt. You know, sometimes money be a little funny.
Negroes might not show pay, you know, overtime.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, they show up when they feel like it, and your money sometimes come when it feel like it.
You have to worry about getting shot. We were doing Gucci Mane video.
Sometimes Negroes,
and then they would pull guns out and stuff.
Yeah, we had shootouts at the job. You know, it's like all that shit.
Shootouts at the job.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, but all that shit. I mean, we've had adventures. He had adventures. See, I stopped doing it after when the money started getting really crazy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I started doing commercials with this friend of mine, Kevin. And so we were doing like sort of high-end, you know, McDonald's and Burger King, all that sort of just commercials because the video money started getting so wild. But he stayed on with the videos with him and Carl for a couple more years.
And we would do like 3 or 4 videos every week, and I actually made a living doing music videos.
Yeah, and so I did too
when I got my start. Yeah,
I had no respect
for
money.
When you were
because we worked so fast.
Yeah, I remember
you. Because you were a production coordinator.
I was a coordinator, became a manager, and then I went over and started doing locations. Yes.
So so coordinator's lower than a manager? I thought the manager was
they work together.
They work together, but essentially the manager is who the coordinators report to, essentially.
Oh, okay.
The coordinator does the work for a lot of the work for the manager.
So you was working with Kalina for a while.
Yeah.
Because I got out of the game just around the time you must have got just
you
really
were, yes, because you were about to leave the music video world. I met you. I worked with you a lot more, Irie.
In
those early stages for me.
And I did music videos. I was more of an electrician on music videos. That was before I got into television and movies.
Exactly.
For about a year and a half, I did nothing but movies because I like movies because you can set up the shot, basically. And with television, it's like manufacturing a product. So you don't get to be as artistic as you get to be as when you're doing a movie. And so, you know, I like the movie because I get time to set up properly and really do a nice cinematic shot. And they're gonna get the shot right. They're gonna set the shot up. Just the whole structure, everything of a movie versus a television show is
versus a video.
Except for Netflix. Shout out to Netflix, though. Netflix makes their television like movies. So
they do.
I want to give a shout out to Netflix. I love working on Ozark and also Stranger Things.
Yeah. Those. Oh my gosh. Yes. Georgia essentially is unique in the world of production because we have one of the most diverse crews.
And we just have
many people that are moving here just looking for.
But the crews, the reason we got so many Negroes because black. I'm sorry. I'm so off the
we
chain.
We knew what you mean.
Yeah. But actually, you know, because it was the videos brought all them Negroes out there because everybody got a chance to play. And, you know, the whole thing is about practicing. Getting in the game is practicing. It ain't about you having special skill sets. You have to get out there and play. And if you get out there on the field, even on a video with the old crazy ways and wild stuff, you still get a skill set that is sellable to these other folk who are, like, trying to make these big movies. And, like, he got a lot of experience as a video that he probably wouldn't have.
I learned my speed from the music videos and working fast.
You learn how to, and plus you learn a lot of creative stuff in terms of not having enough money.
Absolutely.
To have the equipment that you're supposed to have.
That just makes you more marketable, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And all of it, that make. And I think part of the reason that there is, I'm pretty sure Atlanta has a bigger percentage. Because when I was doing videos, I used to meet DPs from L.A., they had been in 20 years, had never seen a black key, never seen a black gaffer, you know. So L.A., I mean, I didn't meet so much from New York, but I used to meet from L.A. more than a few times. And they couldn't believe that I knew what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I knew enough to get them through their little job. And so, but I think that's part of the thing, that Atlanta has a stockpile of black folk who already knew how to do it. And so we have some black gaffers. We don't have that many black keys. Mm. But we have a couple of black keys.
I'm a black key grip, so you know.
Right.
Shout out to Bobcat Productions, Angie Bones. She gave me the opportunity to be a key grip, and I'm very thankful. I also did a movie as a key grip last year called The Trap. Eric White directed it. It had Mike Epps was in it as well. So hopefully it'll be coming out soon.
Okay.
And but all that led to, I think, to like more cats being a rare and able to do things, you know.
So you got generations. So he was the first generation of Atlanta.
Absolutely.
And then I was the second generation. And then you had some guys maybe came in about 10 years ago. They would be like the third generation. And now you've got the fourth generation. And every generation comes and takes it a little bit further. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see more black key grips in Atlanta right now.
Yeah, you gotta have department heads. That's the only way you can get somebody.
Annoying in my field to not have, you know, to always have to go work for, you know, White Key Grip, you know, outside of over at Tyler Perry where Kevin Ham's the Key Grip. There are, and I want to give a shout out to Anthony Jacobs. He was a black rigging Key Grip on Black
sure
Lightning.
Didn't get man of play. Yeah,
but those two people,
they're the last
only,
two. They're
only
the
black Key Grips right now that we have actually working in Atlanta. So I would love for that to increase.
Yeah, we need. So you're basically saying we need to have more people at the
step
top.
Up.
More people at the top.
More. The productions to actually. I've heard about these inclusion riders that they're including, but actually,
what's an inclusion rider?
So the inclusion rider is now almost like a guarantee that producers sign at the beginning of a project that essentially guarantees that they will give fair consideration to as many candidates as possible, not just people they're used to hiring, which happens to be people who look like them.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, but Irie is saying that needs to extend even more and go to behind the camera and considering people of color, women.
I think it's absolutely necessary. Because the other thing is, like, when we did Long Walk Home with Whoopi Goldberg, that was one of her things, was making sure we had a bunch of black folk. And when Spike came in, they actually jumped up and down to make sure that there was black folk there. A lot of times they're coming into these shows, they're just barely hanging in there, and they ain't got no position to be able to jump up and down and say, we got to have some black folk. Because, like, when they did Long Walk Home, that was a long time ago, and they had a bunch of us came on through there and got work because we were like, you know, that was one of her requirements.
Right.
She had to see some Negroes around the set.
Well, so now they're saying that they're requiring this. Not that it's in any particular, like, bylaws anywhere, but it's a thing now that they say
we need more opportunities.
Absolutely. We need more.
That's pretty cool.
And
y'all moving forward. I'm glad to hear it.
Well, I'm glad that you were happy about this because, like you were saying earlier, there was a time not that long ago in our lifetime, Irie, where, you know, you didn't see many of us.
When I first started working, I've been a member of our union since 2003, so 16 years, 19 years, you know, working in the business. But for a long time, I was one of the only black Dolly Grips in town. You know, I was one of the only black people that actually was working with the camera department. So I used to work with a lot of guys from L.A., and they had never actually had to work with an African-American or a black person. And it was kind of shocking to them. It was a culture shock to them. And it was a culture shock to me as well.
Right.
But
well, they give you the blues. They can be really nasty.
You know, and then really these skills that I'm learning, you know, as being a Dolly Grip, learning about the camera and everything, this skill set is not like something that's taught and passed out to everyone. So a lot of people aren't privy to the information, the things that I understand about camera movement and setup. You know, just not having a lot of people haven't been able to make that far because it's very mental. So they can mentally throw you out of the game and you can't perform on the job. You can't keep the jobs and get them.
You got to be a stress frunkie. You know that.
So you have to be able to.
You gotta be a stress junkie. You gotta be a stress junkie to do this game.
And you gotta be able to operate under pressure and under, you know, you might, like, I've had all kinds of instances where I was dealing with camera operators and they just didn't like me and they didn't want me there and they had no choice but to deal with me. But right now we have a lot more black Dolly Grips. But when I started pushing Dolly back in like 2010. There were none. And when you look at, you know, in the world as far as doing my job and my position, there are not that many people that have the resume that I have as a young African-American Dolly Grip.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I plan on moving on to other things such as producing and directing where I get a chance to, you know, do my own creativity because I've made the studios plenty of money working for them. They've got plenty of my life. And so now I want to have some of my life and make some money for myself using my skills that I learned on the job.
All right, I like that. And have that balance.
Yes.
Essentially, what you're saying is, you're telling people generally you need to expand your network, period.
Period.
You know, it's not just about creating a community of people that look like you per se, but at that point, I guess it could help.
They have a bunch of beginner white folk all over the place. You see beginner white folk everywhere. You see beginner white folk in sets. You see beginner white folk in props. You see beginner white folk in the grip department. Don't know shit. Just out there working, right? Well, how come that person couldn't have been a black person? Why that person, that beginner person couldn't have been in hair and makeup couldn't have been a black person? But they don't have no encouragement for that. There's nothing to say, oh, we need to try to do that. They don't even care. It's not even an issue. We're trying to get this job done and we're going to get the best people we can find. And if they all happen to be white, that's just what it is. No, it's not what it is.
Especially not on a black network and a black TV show.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what I can't understand. And one of the things I have a hard time with, I'm not really that interested in the business because I've watched all these people come into the business and be in a position to hire me now. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to get a job from somebody when you know you had 10, you got 10 years experience on them and then you're trying to get a job from them. Mm. They're not really in that. They might not want to hire you. So I'm just tired. For me, I would love to be hired by black people in this business and to have a black boss to go to work for sometime. Not all the time, but at least sometimes. So it lets me know that option is still possible and that you can achieve that in this business in my field.
Gentlemen, I want to say that speaking with you together has been a huge pleasure. And I was super excited to do this. I've been wanting to talk with you both for a while. So I appreciate you coming on my show.
Oh, and, well, great having
and sharing your knowledge with us, because there are kids listening and watching us and they want to be in our shoes, you know, one day and possibly beyond, which that's the goal at the end of the day, right? It's to continue with it. Keep it moving.
Actually, you know, the goal is really to save the world. That's what we're all trying to do. We're trying to put out the whole thing about presenting your story is trying to make things better. You're going out there with the impression that you feel like what you have to say is going to make people listen and have a better life. And you wouldn't be doing this if you weren't trying to do that, because it's bigger than you.
That was Balaji Bailey. We also heard from his son, Irie. Both work in grip departments on film sets in Atlanta. They are who you mean when you say, "Get a grip!" Well, at least on a movie set. And that's it for us today. Our show was produced by Sean Powers, and Don Smith is our editor. The theme music is by MBB. I'm Kalina Bowler. You can reach us and subscribe to our podcast for free at gpb.org/podcast. If you have a moment, review and rate us on iTunes. We also want to hear from you. Do you work in the film industry? Tell us what you do. You can reach us at thecredits@gpb.org. Until next time, see you after the movies.